So now, continuing in the Purvanga karmas, or in yoga, we're trying to bring the consciousness up to the proper spiritual standard to worship the Lord. Then, after establishing our seat, establishing the seat for the paraphernalia, taking the blessings of the spiritual master, then we purify the hands, the flowers, the paraphernalia, and ourself. Then perform Bhuta Shuddhi. So now the paraphernalia and ourself are considered purified. And the place where we're placing everything is properly situated. Now the next thing is, as we start the preliminary worship, this is still within yoga. This is still for the purpose of bringing the consciousness to the proper standard. So the next thing is worshipping the bell, the Lord's bell, Ganta Puja. So then one can offer, by offering chandan and a flower petal, with the mantra, Iti Ganta Pushpe Om Jayadvani Mantra Mata Swaha. And then the flower petal, with the chandanan, it could be fixed to the bell, and then we ring the bell. And while thinking of the bell as the Lord's servant, we say Sarva Vadya Maya Mayi Gante Deva Devasya Vallabhe Tvam Vina Naiva Sarvesham Subham Bhavati Shobhane. O beautiful bell, so dear to Sri Krishna, the God of gods, you embody the sweet sound of all music. Without you, there is no auspiciousness for anyone. So the bell is very dear to the Lord. It's one of his paraphernalia because all music is embodied within the bell. When one rings the bell, then all the different music is there. All the different aspects are there. So we see in Golok Vrindavan, every word is a song. So having music throughout the whole puja and all that accomplished by ringing the bell, then is very pleasing to the Lord. So the bell for its particular service is being respected here. And then after that is the Lord's conch, while offering flowers and chandan to the Lord's bathing conch, chant Eti Ganta Pushpe Om Hum 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 Namaha Maha Shankaya Swaha. So the shank is also considered very dear to the Lord because of its nature to purify the water that's used for the bathing and used for the argya. So the Lord, these two are considered very special out of all of the various paraphernalia. So these two are being worshipped here. Then next, we have the worship of the spiritual master. So from this point, this is the point at which many pujaris become bewildered and think that now we have begun the main puja. So they mix up this part of the worship of the spiritual master, worship of Lord Chaitanya, in yoga with worship of the Lord in yoga, in ija. This is a very, very important point. Because devotees will see, I worship the spiritual master, means I'm actually offering paraphernalia, or I'm doing it through water, like that. But I'm actually worshiping the spiritual master, then I'm worshiping Lord Chaitanya, then I'm worshiping Krishna. So they know that one goes up through this, but because of with time, somehow, and the bewilderment of when we're offering artik, that we pick up the lamp, we show it to the spiritual master, then previously it was understood that you are taking the blessings of the spiritual master, bringing it to him, and through the parampara it will be offered to Krishna. And so the artik actually starts when you go through the parampara and get to Krishna. But with time, then devotees started thinking, hey, you know, I'm offering this to my spiritual master, and being such a greedy fellow, he'll naturally take it for himself. And then the remnants only then will be given to Krishna. So this is nonsense. So we'll just bypass the spiritual master and everybody. And we'll just offer directly to Krishna. So we've discussed this many times here, that this is a improper understanding of what's going on. But the actual thing is that we ourselves have no approach to Krishna except through the parampara. They are doing the worship. We are assisting them. And our right to assist them is the spiritual master, through the spiritual master. So if this is clear, then this part can also be clear. So what happens now in that thing of transformation, or that mix of understanding of the worship, then we get another aspect. We get the opposite, but just as strange, is that, okay, now we're going to worship the spiritual master. So we pick up, we go through the 16 items, and we offer all these 16 items to the spiritual master. Then we actually do take the prasad and offer it to Lord Chaitanya and all that. And then we do take that prasad again and then offer it to Krishna. And then we think that the 16 items for Guru, Gauranga, and Krishna are completed. But they don't make the difference. One has to make the difference between yoga and ija, or preparation for the worship and the actual worship. Just like in the artik, when you pick up the paraphernalia, you're showing it, you purify it, it's yoga. When you show it to the spiritual master, it's yoga. When you go through the parampara, it's yoga. When you get to the main deity, it's ija. So in the same way as now we will worship the spiritual master, then this is yoga. So if you want to worship with, generally this is done with water, no paraphernalia. If you want to use paraphernalia, it has to be a separate set, completely different than what you're going to offer to the main deity. And if you want to worship Lord Chaitanya, it has to be a completely separate set than that which is going to be offered to the main deity. So if you want to be very opulent, you're going to have three full sets of the 16 items. Then one can accomplish this. If not, you keep one set. Fine. That is offered to the main deity. And to Guru and Gauranga, we do it with water. Because there must be a very clear, clean division between yoga and ija. Right? One is we're preparing the mind so that it is on the transcendental platform to worship the Lord. We even find, it will be noted, that the Manasa Puja, the Dhyanam and Manasa Puja for the main deity is still not considered within ija. It's within within yoga. Because it's still preparing the mind to actually worship the main deity. So all this is to prepare ourselves. Just like here, as we mentioned, that there is ourselves, the Lord, and the paraphernalia. So all these things must be in their proper position. So we've made a proper place for us, we've made a proper place for the paraphernalia, keeping them according to how we can best serve the Lord. And we ourselves have taken permission from Bhumi Devi for giving us a place. Then we're going to purify ourselves further in the subtle platform. Gross has been done in Abhigamana. Now the subtle is being done now in this yoga for ourselves in the paraphernalia. Then, once everything is purified, now we start to begin the preliminary worships. These are also to prepare the mind. We worship the bell and the conch, understanding the Lord's paraphernalia, being His paraphernalia, is therefore worshipable. It's non-different from Him. So therefore we worship it. But with its own paraphernalia. Can you give more loudly? Exact whom? Why whom? Whom is we? You were mentioning in Ramayan that it's used by the sages in protection, because the conch, when the conch is blown, then it removes all inauspiciousness. And we see in the, I think it's in the Nectar Devotion, it mentions when Krishna blows his conch shell, then the hearts of the demons become shattered, and their wives have miscarriages, and like this. So it removes bad influences, the conch. You know, it's very unnerving to the demoniac and very inspiring to the devotees. It's like we see when Duryodhana and everyone blew their conch shells. It was very tumultuous, very great sound. But then when Krishna and Arjuna and the other Pandavas and that sounded their transcendental conch shells, and it says it shattered the hearts of Duryodhana and his party. So this is the nature of the conch. So we're dealing with the Lord's conch, so it has that potency. You know, if it's just our conch, then maybe not, but the Lord's conch, then yes.
Large worship of the Lord's paraphernalia, does that fall into Jiva Yoga?
The worship of the paraphernalia, the Lord's paraphernalia, falls within yoga. Anything other than directly offering the 16 items to the main deity is all yoga. It's all considered Purvanga karma. Purvanga just means preliminary. Karma means activity. Purva Anga means the first activities. You know? It means there's the main worship, but the preliminary, Purva Anga, the preliminary limbs of preparation, that's yoga. So yoga, Purva Anga, karma, they're the same. It's just... Yes?
I think I read it in CC that Mahaprabhu orders the brahmacharis to worship was the copen of Nityananda Prabhu. So this is like Padhyanam, there is a verse in Padhapura. It says Padhyanam Samarchana, this worship of the paraphernalia is higher than worshipping the Lord Himself. Could you explain on this why it's higher? And if you do like something like that, this must be of course easier.
Worship of the Tadiya, and this must be Ija. See, now if all you have is, and you mentioned Chaitanya Charitamrita, then Lord is telling that one must worship, with brahmacharis to worship Nityananda Prabhu's copens. So now, they are not, you probably won't see that they have the copens there and Nityananda Prabhu personally. If they're both there, you're going to be worshipping Lord Nityananda directly. And his kopans he'll probably be wearing. Right? Or if you have some, you'll have them in your room kept nicely somewhere where you're worshipping. Like that. The whole point, so one can see, the point is Ija is the main deity. Yoga is anything before that. Just like, let us say we're worshipping the spiritual master. That is the main deity. So worship the spiritual master will be Ija. Anything prior to that will be yoga. Now if our main deity is Lord Chaitanya, then worship of the spiritual master becomes yoga. And worship of Lord Chaitanya becomes Ija. Now if our main deity is Radha and Krishna, then worship of Guru and Gauranga becomes yoga. And worship of Radha and Krishna becomes Ija. You understand? So the whole point is who is the main worshipable deity? And then coming back from that is who is paraphernalia, associates, how do we approach, like that. This is so, it's a principle. One has to see this principle. Otherwise we see detail. Well, why is it here I'm worshipping and it's yoga, here I'm worshipping it's Ija. Like when we're worshipping at Guru Puja in the morning for Srila Prabhupada, that's Ija. Then we sing, but here then it's yoga. Because we have to see the principle. The principle is Ija is the main deity. Yoga is anything to approach that main deity. We cannot approach Radha and Krishna without Lord Chaitanya and Guru. We can't approach Lord Chaitanya without Guru. Right? So the whole idea is just how much is there, that much is going. You understand? So that will make it very clear. So when the brahmacharis have Nityananda Prabhu's kopan, and in their ashram they are worshipping that is their deity. So that becomes Ija. Now if they also have a deity, then it becomes paraphernalia, and then it may be part of their puja either before or after. So it may be in the concluding part of the Ija, with the remnants offered to the main deity, or it may be in the beginning, preliminary approach. Like that. The Tadiya, because the Lord is Atmaram, and He is fully satisfied in His activities, and does not require anything, fully satisfied. So in this mood, he is the enjoyer. Now, as the devotees expand, and as his paraphernalia expands, then they have a particular mood of affection towards the Lord, a particular relationship. So they are the what's called the ashray. The Lord is the vishay, the enjoyer. And the devotee and the Lord's, you know, paraphernalia, his expansions, the dham and all his paraphernalia. These are all in the category of the, they bring out this moods from him. They're the ashray of a particular mood. So then when the Lord sees that particular devotee, that invokes in him a particular response. Because Krishna says in the Gita, I will respond with you as you surrender to me. So because Mother Jashoda, surrenders to Krishna in the parental ras, Krishna reciprocates in that rasa. Because the cowherd boys surrender as friends, he reciprocates in that way. As the gopis, they surrender in the conjugal mood, he reciprocates that way. So Krishna is rasa. All rasas are in him. But the devotee reciprocates in one rasa. Right? You understand? Like that. So this brings pleasure to the Lord, because on his own, he is God, no problem. But being God is nice. But interacting with the devotees, God finds more nice. Therefore, the devotees, because they increase and bring out these different flavors for Krishna to taste and increase his pleasure, therefore he considers worship of them better than worship of him. Right? Like that. They are the object. He is the subject. It means everybody's talking about Krishna. Right? The devotees, all the devotees are talking about Krishna. He's the supreme subject. But everyone's talking about him. So that means not including him. But when you take him as a complete whole, he is then thinking about his devotee. Right? So they become the supreme object. So we see this whole principle comes back down. Like that. It's interesting like that. So then, so those who worship the devotee are considered more dear to the Lord. Like that. But worshiping the devotee means worshiping the devotee, understanding who is that devotee's Lord is also. It's not that we're worshiping the devotee separate from God. Worship of the devotee means with God. Same way as the advanced understanding, worshiping God means with his devotees. If we worship God without his devotees, it's a very preliminary understanding. Very preliminary. As we recognize the devotees, right? Because a madhyama means he recognizes devotees. Then that is where advanced devotional service starts. Why? What's the difference? The Kanista understands as God, the madhyama understands as God. But the madhyama is considered advanced. Well, the Kanista is not. Right? Means you have Kanista, and then when you move to, which is, you know, the beginning stages, neophyte. So in devotional service, you go from neophyte to advanced devotee to Mahabhagavat. So we see that there's a great jump between neophyte and advanced devotee. Right? And then between advanced devotee and Mahabhagavat, then maybe also a lot of distance, but the flavor is very similar. So the main difference is there, is that the what makes it a sudden jump from neophyte to advanced devotee is that they recognize other devotees. And for Krishna, that's where the whole spiritual life becomes serious, because otherwise he can just sit there on his own. He doesn't need to expand the living entities. Right? He doesn't need to expand everything. He's Atmaram, but he does it because it increases his pleasure by interacting with all those devotees. Right? They're always there, but it's just whether he manifests the pastimes. So he expands everything. So that gives more pleasure. So when we say name, it's the Lord's name. Form, that's Krishna. Qualities, that's Krishna. Pastimes means Krishna and his devotees. So we see that topmost platform means we understand Krishna and his devotees. So Madhyama means we start to recognize devotees. You know, beginning is here on this platform. And, you know, what is the speciality of the transcendental devotees, the Lord's associates? Then we get a taste and attachment for this service under their direction. And then ultimately we get an attachment for Krishna and his pastimes. But in all these cases, we see these levels of the Madhyama. We see that there is the attachment to devotees. And as the more one matures in this, then the more one is able to appreciate the devotees, what service they are doing for the Lord. So this pleases Krishna then the most. Because we are going to, in other words, the devotees, the personal associates are worshipping Krishna. Right? Krishna is worshipping his devotees. So now if we worship those devotees, then that makes Krishna very pleased. And the devotees know that this worship is meant for the Lord. So it's not for them. So they don't mind. Right? Because they're representing the Lord in this way. So it becomes a very nice thing. And Krishna is very pleased because he sees that it's... Right? Just, you know, Prabhupada says, love me, love my dog. Like that. You can't be nice to a person and then not be nice to the rest of his family and his paraphernalia and, you know, his house and all that kind of stuff. For the person... It's no fun just sitting in an empty parking lot, you know, like that. It means that your personality is there. You like things in a certain way. You like your garden in a certain way, your house in a certain way, your furnishings in a certain way. Then, you know, the family members, you know, how the house is run and all that in a certain way. And then you feel that you're able to manifest nicely your personality. Right? So if somebody deals with all these things badly, then it also has some connection to us. In the same way as this is how Krishna likes it. So he's expanded all these devotees. He's expanded this whole system. He has made this system of the parampara and the, you know, respect for senior devotees and friendship with equals and compassion for juniors. Like that. So you don't like it, then it doesn't say much for our appreciation of Krishna. Because that's the way Krishna set it up. Mm-hmm. Does that make some sense? The other aspect is by approaching and serving the devotees, then we actually get Krishna's favor. Because he sees that if you can approach the devotees properly, then you'll be able to approach him properly. Right? That is the thing.
Raja, I think also it's like you said, in the example of Lord Nityananda and the Kopi, even these things which the Lord chooses himself to see as more elevated than himself, that is because they're evoking that pleasure for him, so that's his choice. But it's not that we would, in the presence of those tadiya things, somehow disregard the Lord himself. He says it's more important. Now here's something that's tidy and there's the Lord. So we'll, because he said so, we'll pay more attention to these tidier things than him. It's not like that either. We will obviously take his choice of how he chooses to relate and give importance as paramount. But nevertheless, we'll understand that's his choice. But still we'll understand ultimately his paramount. That's why his choice is paramount and how he chooses to see things. So it's not as if the Lord is there and something that's tadiya is also there. We would then ignore the Lord and focus on what is tidy.
Yeah, very good point. Because the tadiya is supposed to has importance because of its connection with Krishna. So you can't think of one without the other. The Lord means his paraphernalia, and the paraphernalia means the Lord. And it becomes very, very nice. This is where the sweetness comes. See, the philosophy, the specifically very logically presented and very categoric, or you know, logical sequence of presenting the philosophical points, that's specifically to remove the doubts. Because we've been in the material world a long time, we've developed a lot of doubts. You know, doubts, misgivings. So in the beginning we have to establish, you know, here is God, and we are very small. God is the enjoyer, we are not. Material world is a place of suffering, and the spiritual world is not. And if we try to enjoy here, we're going to have problems. If we go to the spiritual world, we'll have no problems. So once we're convinced of all that, then we can actually start taking part in the, you know, the more we're convinced of that means our faith is greater. And the greater our faith, then the greater we'll be able to take part in the Lord's mission. You know, whether it is here in the Sankirtan mission or whether it is in the spiritual realm. But in any case, until that faith is established, then it's very difficult. So that's done by the philosophy, by study of the sambandha, the abhideya, and the prayojana, of the relationship between ourselves, the material nature, and the Lord, the process by which we can obtain the Lord, and the goal. That. So we see as we get closer that the sweetness is very great. But it's very difficult to appreciate that if we do not understand and respect the Lord's position, the devotee's position. If any one of these is off, then there can't be affection like that. It can't. Means the attachment, there can only be basically one attachment. It's either material or spiritual. We can't have both. You can have where it's starting to dawn on the spiritual attachment, but there's still material attachment is there. It's starting to be lost. But it's like moving something. You know, it's either on this side or that side. As it crosses, it'll be part this side, part that side. So how much is on that side? The balance will be this side.
Is it always like directly proportionate, Mara? In other words, are there instances where it's not, or is it like, you know, if you're like 40% spiritually attached, you would be, you know, and 60% materially like that?
I would think it would be. Mm-hmm. It would be like that. Because attachment is one entity. That's the thing.
The dynamic is the same.
Yeah. There's one entity, and that's the rasa is one entity.
Mm-hmm.
Though the attachment means rasa is with what you're attached to. So we can either be attached to Krishna and his devotees and pastimes, or we're attached to the material nature, to our emotions and to our senses. Like that. That is, and you see the Bhagavatam is always spending its time trying to break down our attachments for these things. We have these attachments for you know, all the relationships, you know, society, friendship, and love. But that's emotional attachment. It's the same, the element of rasa is there, it's just been perverted. Right? It's just like you can take some rice and you can cook some nice pushpana for the Lord. You can take some rice and cook something, you know, just for karmis to eat. You know? So it's the same rice, so it can either be cooked with the Lord in mind, offered to the Lord, and then, or it can be cooked for one's own sense gratification. Same rice. So the attachment and rasa is the same. It's just whether it's in its pure form connected to Krishna, or whether it's in its perverted form in the material world. So love turns into lust. Material world, that attachment manifests to Krishna as love. The material world, that same attachment manifests to the material nature as lust. So it's transforming. So naturally there will be some portion is starting to become transformed and some is not. That's why you always have to worry about your association and offenses and all these things. Otherwise what is gained may be lost. Like that. You know, if there's no offense, nothing is lost. You just may be slowed down. Instead of getting out in one life, it may take a few lives. But if there's offense, because the Lord's devotees and everything, because that's what we're dealing with first. Generally, we're dealing with the Lord's devotees as paraphernalia. We're dealing with the philosophy. You know, and in His form is the Holy Name. So this is what we're seeing. This is what we're able to deal with. We're tangibly able to understand and accept. As we progress, then we're able to understand more and more. Then it goes deeper and deeper. Otherwise, then so one always has to be very careful that one doesn't allow it to degrade.
And with the positive and the negative, some devotees question, do we have to, I sometimes hear a lecture of devotees explaining intricately how Maya works, the material energy illusion. And other devotees say, why focus on Maya? Why not just hear Krishna's pastimes and hear about Krishna, which is a positive aspect? And as you develop a taste for that, then Maya will automatically diminish or recede in your background.
That's fine as long as we have no engagement with Maya.
Hmm.
If we just sit down and hear about Krishna all day, chant Krishna's name all day, if someone happens to bring us something to eat, we eat it, you know, and then only a little bit, and just spend our time hearing about Krishna, you know, sleeping is practically minimal or non-existent, eating is practically minimal, like that, there's no other activity, you know, no sex, no defending. If we do like that, then yes, you can just hear about Krishna. But the point is if Maya as Krishna's energy and how it works, this is all arranged by Krishna. So you also see it in connection to Krishna. You see it from that angle. Problem is when we see Maya as something for us to enjoy. Looks like it is time to move inside. Let me take this time. So that is why it's interesting to note that the Sahajiyas, they only want to hear about Krishna and his pastimes, Rasalila and the 10th canto and that, and even up 10th canto, only the Vrindavan pastimes, like that. They're not interested in the other pastimes. That's because they themselves are a bit strange. It's not a natural position. One may think, oh yes, this is very advanced, but actually it's not very advanced. It's not very mature or deep. Because that means they can't see other things in relationship to Krishna. You know? And therefore, they only want to hear about Krishna in a particular way. And in this means only in this way they'll accept other things of Krishna they're not interested in. So that means Krishna's, you know, his unlimited pastimes and manifestations and all that have no interest to them, you know. You know, it would be just like in comparing that to, let's say, a mother. And the mother has a child. And so naturally, any good mother will only hear about things that are directly between the child and herself. She doesn't want to hear what the kid did with the father. She doesn't want to hear anything to do with what the kid goes out and plays with friends, doesn't even want to know about all that, you know, doesn't want to take part in anything to do with the child, you know, playing with friends and all that. And isn't that the natural mood of the mother? Right? No. That's if mother was like that, everybody would say, this mother is very strange. Very selfish, because she only is interested in just what is with her and this child. That's it. and anyone else in the family, any of the child's interests other than her with herself, she wants nothing to do with it. Hmm. So one would understand that this mother is very selfish, and her actual manifestation of motherhood is very, very minimal. It's just based on gross attachment. So in the same way is then when you have a devotee who says they can only listen to this particular aspect of Krishna's pastimes, then we can understand we're not dealing with a very advanced devotee. Right? The mother is happy to hear what the child did at school, what they did when they visited relatives, what they did playing with their friends, what they did with other members of the family, you know, what they do on their own. Very happy to hear. Of course, the main taste will be the most intense manifestation of the relationship will be when the mother and child are together, especially when the mother can do something like that. But that doesn't mean that these other parts are not also interesting. So same way as the devotee is happy to hear anything about the Lord.
So if a personality says, I don't know, maybe an imitation of so-called great devotees who are fixed in a particular rasa, oh, I don't care to hear of Krishna in Dwarka or Krishna in Mathura. I only want to hear of Krishna in Vrindavan. Then we should be a little cautious.
We should be very cautious. Mm. Because this means it's like this. One is happy to hear anything about Krishna. Mm-hmm. But one may take a special pleasure in particular pastimes. You know? So that's all. It's just like a normal person is very happy to eat a full meal. You know, the bitter and the chutneys and this and all the different things. They may prefer the sweet or the bitter or the dal or the fries or, you know, this. They get some but they know the whole
meal.
They're
not going to reject the rest.
They're not going to just sit down and only eat sweets. Mm. Oh, I don't care for all these other things. I'm beyond all that, you know. We see that the gopis and that, when they're dealing with Krishna, and they're the topmost. So then when they're talking with Krishna and saying, you're so cruel, you cut off Suparnika's nose, she approached you, and you cut off her nose and all this. That means that they heard these things.
Hmm.
You know? Like that. We see that in, what is it? I think it's Wonderful Krishna. Very short chapter. It's all with the residents of Vrindavan. They're all talking about Krishna did this and Krishna did that. Nanda Baba and the others are talking about how Krishna killed these different demons. And, you know, so killing the demons has nothing to do with his, you know, paternal rasa.
Hmm.
You know, so I mean, if it's about Krishna, they're happy to hear it. But they will hear it through their mood. Right? Because otherwise you're saying, no, Krishna, you can only manifest to me in this way. So then we can say like that, fine, but then we should not repeat the last verses of the Shikshastika. Especially the Aslishyava Aparada Tampinashtunam Adarshanan Marmahatam Karotuva. Because these are, you manifest to me however you like.
Mm.
If it makes you happy to be there, fine. If it makes you happy, makes you happy that I'm suffering because you're not there, fine. Whatever it is, like that. Just whatever it'll be. So Krishna likes to do all these different things. Like that. The Kanista will generally have a tendency to think like that. Like that. The Kanista generally will think that they can only see one thing. Though we must understand that these difficulties that are there, anarthas, continue through the process. So that might also be something, even someone's more advanced. There might still be some aspect of that. Point is one doesn't mind hearing any topic, but one is specifically attached to that.
And you were explaining to me once, I remember, so I don't want to misquote, so you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you were saying, you know, in our society there's a tendency to think, make too much distinction between, oh, you know, like this is a Narayan form of the Lord, or this is actually Vrindavan form, or this is because actually God is God. He may, for reciprocation, manifest in so many ways, but ultimately the Supreme Lord is one basic personality. Mm. Well, not basic, very elaborate, unlimited. But we should, we on our side, shouldn't make so much
distinction. This comes from some conversation Srila Prabhupada has. Someone is making some point, and Prabhupada said, don't make so much distinction.
Hmm.
Either that it was a class, but it was Prabhupada was speaking. His devotees was like, you know, there's Vishnu and then there's Krishna. No, Prabhupada's point is no, Krishna is Vishnu.
Hmm.
You know, Vishnu is Krishna. But we must understand that Krishna is first, that manifestation is first. Then he expands as Vishnu. So the in other words, it's like this. Krishna in Vrindavan, he the way he manifests, I mean, how you say, the way he manifests his reciprocation with his devotees is the most sweet.
Hmm.
And it is the original form. So that means all other aspects are contained there, though in their very nice balanced way. Very pleasantly. It just may be just a touch of flavor at some point. Like that. So all the different aspects are moved, but they're all the different mellows are there. But they're done in a very nice way. Right? Just like we see in Vrindavan, he'll kill the demons. So his anger is there. You know? Full manifestation that is as Nrisinga. But a touch of it's there, just enough to kill, you know, the demons. Because they're coming and bothering the devotees of Vrindavan. Devotees are doing their service nicely, and now this demon comes in and, not caring for anybody, makes a big stink. So he's killing the demons. So that aspect is there. Though he does that through his Vasudeva form. You know? So it's like everything is there, very nicely balanced. Most, you know, balanced. Now, and he reciprocates with all the five rasas very intimately. Now, when he gets to Dwarka, this Mahanarayan, then we see the five rasas are still there, but the intimacy is not as much.
Hmm.
Then when we go to Ayodhya, then also those five rasas are there. Intimacy is also a little bit less, and it has started to become restricted. He only has one wife. Dwarka has 16,108, plus all their maidservants. Right? Then there's so many, you know, senior persons, as, you know, in the parental rasa, and not in Dwarka, there's only a few. I mean, in Dwarka there's so many, in Ayodhya there's only a few. So like that, it starts to become restricted, especially on the conjugal and the parental. Become restricted as to the who's what is open. Like that. Then you move into Vaikuntha, and, you know, there is no parental, because he's God, right? Conjugal is there, but there's only Lakshmi, and that's very much on the back burner. He just sits there. You know, she sits on his lap, but that's it. There's no, otherwise, he's the main feature, and here's his energy, and that's it. And, yeah, so that's what's open.
It seems like sometimes devotees, I don't know if it's to give impression that they're advanced or more advanced than some of their god brothers, but they, I think what Prabhupada was also warning us is about being almost disparaging about so-called lesser manifestations of the Lord, because that shouldn't be there, and that's practically offensive.
Yeah.
They're almost, oh well, Prabhu, that's Aishwarya, and we're not interested in that. But actually, you know, you can't be not interested in something that you practically haven't even tasted yet.
Yeah, no, you can't. It actually falls back on the person who's saying it.
Hmm.
Because it's just like the mother. She sees the child's shoes. Okay, it may be his track shoes that he goes out with his friends and runs around the block and, you know, plays sports, and is, and the mother's not involved in any way, right? But when she sees those shoes, what does she remember? Right? She remembers the child. And when she remembers the child, then what's the next natural thing she remembers? What happens between her and the child? So even though it may be the track shoes, then it reminds her of the past times of her sitting with the child. So in the same way, we understand these principles of rasa, then it's explained, is that you can enter from anywhere, and it'll always, by, it's called udipan, it reminds you. So certain things have very natural, direct, you know, like seeing the color of the tamal tree, or the color of the monsoon cloud, or you know, hearing the peacocks, or seeing them, or the kukils, you know, all these different things, and they very much directly remind of the Vrindavan pastimes. But the other things will remind and will bring, and it will go through that, because you understand the rasa, and one thing goes to another, like that. So one appreciates. In other words, the devotees appreciate others' services also. Because the whole thing is we're looking at it from our side, what I'm getting out of it. I hear these other pastimes, I don't get zip out of it, you know, so I don't want to hear about them. I just get off on these pastimes. But that means it's more of has a touch of the enjoying mood to it, that the pastimes are to be heard for my enjoyment. Because the point is these are to be heard for Krishna's enjoyment. That we appreciate Krishna, we appreciate Krishna's devotees, we see how much affection, you know, that Maharaj Dasarath has from Lord Ramachandra, you know, when he's gone, his separation he feels, you know, all these different moods, you know, and then we see, and so brings up so many different aspects, and we appreciate that service that he has, that mood. And then from there, then that can naturally go on and on, depending upon Nanda's realization, back to, you know, Nanda and Yashoda, and then their pastimes there, and then, you know, in their house, they take care so nicely, and then in that, then Radharani and the other gopis come and they cook, and then Krishna's, you know, reciprocation with Radharani, and then from that, then it goes off into that direction. So the whole point is that anything sparks remembrance. And then from there it continues. So we see that when in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar, he's in Vaikuntha, right? He's elevated himself to Vaikuntha, and he's there in Vaikuntha, and he's surrounded by opulence and all, you know, everybody there is, you know, 10% in awe and reverence of the Lord. And he's there and he's still in friendship. He's not bewildered by all this awe and reverence. He goes there when everybody goes and offers prayers, and he sits there and sees this is really, yeah, this is, you know, some fun. Looks like the Lord's having a good time here. You know, and he plays the flute for him sometime and this and that. And, you know, the other residents of Vaikuntha complain, you know, you're supposed to stand there, you know, stand up with your hands folded and offer some prayers and all this and that. And this is what you're supposed to do. You know, this is Vaikuntha, don't you know? Proper behavior like that. And then others, and they'll say, no, it's also part of the Lord's pastimes. Lord appreciates remembering his pastimes in Vrindavan like that. So therefore, you know, that he reminds, like, this is also okay. So like this, they have their discussions amongst themselves. And then when no one's around, then Vishnu will come out into the garden and with Gopakumar and talk, and he'll have Gopakumar play the flute, and then afterwards, and he'll get out his flute, right? You know, that nobody's ever seen in Vaikuntha, and he'll play flute, and then he'll manifest himself as Krishna and all the cowherd boys and all that, and then, you know, before someone comes along, then all that's wrapped up and like that. So the point is this is Krishna. So as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. Now in Vaikuntha, he can't reciprocate nicely with you in the mood of Vrindavan. So then he will, by arrangement, then see that you go to Vrindavan. So then Narad Muni came and told him, hey, you won't be happy here. You know, you should go back to your Vrindavan. Like this. So then he goes, he comes back to Boma Vrindavan, and then from here he goes to Goloka Vrindavan. Like that. So it works very, very nicely. Because the Lord wants to reciprocate. As you surrender, the Lord will reciprocate. So even in that form there, if you are have that mood, then Krishna will arrange that other manifestations are there, if that's your mood.
Because that question was asked in connection with Gopal Bhatta's Shaligrams, that Radha Raman manifested from a Damodar Shila.
Mm.
So somebody asked how, and Radha Raman, Tribhanga, this is Krishna, people bending form directly in Vrindavan, this is the highest. So somebody asked how can what seems to be the ultimate form manifest from what seems to be a lesser form of the Lord. So it's due to the reciprocation.
It's just, point is when it says he manifests 60% of the qualities, it means that, I mean, yeah, not 60%, he manifests 60 of the 64 qualities.
Hmm.
So in Vaikuntha it'll be 55 complete fullness, 60 in great opulence. And then in Dwarka it'll be 60 in full opulence. The means that's what you can reciprocate with him on.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna has come as Nrsingadev. It is Krishna. But he will only accept your reciprocation with him in awe and reverence. You know? So that's the point. Is that but in the form of Vrindavan he'll accept, you know, the reciprocation with those 64 qualities. Like that, it's a very means the mood has to be there.
Hmm.
You know, means Krishna and Dwarka is always thinking of going back to Vrindavan, right? So we'll say, well, it's Krishna and Dwarka, he's only manifesting 60 of the 64 qualities, but he's always thinking that I should go back to Vrindavan, you know. But he's thinking that I have my pastimes here, I have to finish. I've come here for some purposes. So now if I go back to Vrindavan, right now, then I've left once and they're feeling such separation. Now if I go back, then if I leave again to finish my work in Dwarka, then it'll be even more devastating. So then he doesn't go. He goes in that his I forget what it's called, but in manifestation of bhava. Forget what that's called, you know? There's a particular name of the form that he went back to Vrindavan.
In Jagannath form?
No, he went back also when Nanda Baba went back.
Like,
He went in that form. It means that in their separation, when they think of Krishna, then he's there, completely experience Krishna's presence.
Oh, yes.
Like that. That cool, because it was just reading today that in the spiritual world there's no difference between future and past.
Because
when you think of the future, you think we'll do this with Krishna, we'll do that with Krishna. You're thinking of Krishna and you're experiencing that now. And if you think of the past, we did this with Krishna, we did that with Krishna, then you're directly with Krishna now. So there's no difference between the present, the future, and the past. It's a totally different setup there. So it's everything's in the present, but it's not. But it's in the. But it doesn't matter if it's future or past, or what's going on now. It's all the same. You get the same experience. Only difference is present will mean sambhog, and future and past will be separation. Either. Feeling the loss of it or the aspiration to gain it. Like that. There's a technical word in that also. In separation, then it has these two divisions where you're aspiring. I think it's rag, purva rag. And then the separation, the viraha. So viraha will be the past. You're thinking about what things were there. And the purva rag means what will be there. Like that. So it gets very technical. The whole science of rasa is technical. But that science becomes understandable as we change our taste for the mundane rasa.
Hmm.
So then you can't have taste for two. You know, it's just like you can't have taste for eating mud and for eating sweets. You know? It's like when you give up the mud taste, you'll like the sweets. Otherwise, you prefer the mud. And if you like the sweets, you won't like the mud. It's not that you will find them both just as relishable. The rasgulla is just as relishable as a chunk of mud. No. Like that. You have to be two. So the same is the lust and attachment of this material world. If that's there, you cannot understand the rasa of the spiritual world. It's just, it's because it's we're dealing with the same subject. Many times we try to separate it into different subjects. So we think we can have the spiritual rasa and the material rasa. But you can't. It's one thing. You know, like I have one potato, right? I can either, you know, put it in a sabji or boil it and make it into a mashed potato, or I can cut it up into pieces and deep fry it. But that's it. It's one potato. So it's either you have this spiritual rasa or you have the material rasa. You know? So as you give up the material rasa, you start to taste the spiritual rasa. So they go hand in hand.
Prabhupada gives that example of jaundice, that everyone knows sugar is intrinsically sweet. It's the very essence of sweetness. But in a jaundiced condition, it will be bitter.
Yes.
But you know you're less jaundiced when it becomes neutral.
Neutral, yeah.
And then you know you're getting better or almost well when it starts to taste sweet.
Yeah.
So it's like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Have you had that experience?
I had
that. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? You taste sugar, you know it's very sweet rock candy, and it just tastes like nothing.
Mm.
I've never had it where it's bitter.
No, I had it. It was actually tasting bad.
Yeah, no, that's bad. I've only had it like neutral, where it's just you taste it and it, you know, you could have picked up a rock or something. It would have tasted about the same, you know. Yeah, so it transforms. The lust transforms back into love. So the less lust, the more love is there. That's why the Mayavadis don't actually get anywhere and cannot be satisfied. Because they may give up the lust, but they don't transform it back into love. So the nature of the living entity for rasa or ananda, ananda means rasa, so that cannot be fulfilled. So just the platform of eternality cannot fulfill. There has to be pastime, which is ananda. Ananda means when you reciprocate, rasa's exchange. So they've given up the material rasa, but because they haven't taken the spiritual rasa, they have to again, according to their nature as souls, take up rasa again. And that means that the only pastimes that they know are material.
So they have to come.
Yeah, so they come. So of course they try to come in from a little bit of the mode of goodness, philanthropic work, and all these different things like this. But they again come right back in. They don't have another option because they have no idea. If they're impersonalists, they don't know about the Lord. They've never heard of it. All these things. And if they're Mayavadis, then they think the spiritual forms and pastimes are material. You know? So they're really bad shape. You know? They're really in bad shape. Impersonalist, at least when he comes in contact with the Lord's form and qualities and pastimes, because he's on the spiritual platform, he has no material attachments. So then he's like that person in the neutral stage of jaundice. It's not sweet, but there's no bitter. But when he comes in contact with the pastimes, immediately the sweetness is noticed. And he knows he's not on the material platform. So then the conclusion is, well, this must be transcendental. That was the Kumara, four Kumaras. Like that. And also Sukadev Goswami. He was on the transcendental platform. Father saying, come out, duty, this, that. Mother saying, oh, please, and so many things. He's just saying, it's all Maya. Why should I bother? No attachment, no attraction. But then, when Krishna came along, and he told him about all the nice things and the pastimes of the Lord, and assured him because of his attachment to the transcendental, then he won't be attracted by the material world. Then he, okay, I'll come out. But when he came out, immediately he just got up and ran. As soon as he was born, he just split. Because he didn't want to get attached to any of this. He just ran off, you know.
And it's interesting in the verse where it says he ran and Vyasadeva was calling him, that it says that the trees also echoed. You know, so it wasn't just Vyasadeva's voice they were echoing. They were echoing the same sentiment. Because he was a pure devotee, that even the trees became attached to him. So they were also asking that he come. So it becomes very sweet. You know? So the sweetness is there. Means in a jaundiced condition, it's just like, how you'd say, when a relation, it's like, how you'd say, someone can read very intimate pastimes, and they may get some more strong, how you say, experience, but the amount of strong experience that they will get will just be a little bit more than the normal experience. But that same association with someone who is very advanced, then they get like an ocean of happiness out of that. You know, so it's better to just move at one's own speed, take what one can, like that. That is always best. You know, the person with jaundice, then they take the rock candy, but they shouldn't think that I'm taking rock candy, so I'll also eat all the, you know, fried things and all that. You know, I stick to my process, and by the process, it'll come. Has to come. From name comes form, comes qualities, comes pastimes. Has to come. As long as we are sincere and we please Guru and Krishna, then it will come. Interesting subject. See, this is the point. We're discussing deity worship. You know, the ritual and all that. So many will say, well, that's not very interesting. But from any point of it, you can get off into so many other points, you know. Because the whole thing is based on rasa. But because we don't understand rasa or have no taste for rasa, right? The rock candy tastes bitter. So therefore it's put into rules and regulations that we can handle. Because it's bitter, okay, you can handle it as long as I only have to eat this much and I only have to eat it at this time of the day. You know? Like that. So it's just like, you know, once at lunch, a little bit of the bitter sabji, okay, I can eat it. You know? But after a while, you find that that's nice. It's a nice, the taking of that preparation is nice. Lord Chaitanya says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, don't avoid the make the spinach and the shukta because it's bitter. So you get a taste for it, then you can eat more. You know, then you don't mind eating. So like that, it just gradually increases. By following the process, then it becomes nice. So the rock candy that in the beginning is bitter, then becomes sweet. So the regulation is there just so that we will step by step keep doing it. We won't do too much, won't do too little. Nice, regulated. And then like that, it gradually increases, gradually deepens, expands. Like that. You know. So it's, or maybe a better example of that, because we were talking bitter and then we used a different example of bitter, may get mixed up. The rock candy is bitter. So we know, okay, doctors told us eat so many pieces per day. And we'll do that. Because the doctor said, and we have faith in the doctor and have faith in the process, we do it. But we only want to eat those pieces. And that's it. We don't want to eat more than that. But as it starts and it comes to the neutral point, we don't mind taking how much he says. But once it starts taking sweet, then why only just 5 pieces? We'll take, you know, kilos. Because it's nice. So in the same way as the devotional service is regulated because we can handle that much. You know, the Bhagavatam is an hour in the morning. As we become advanced, we can sit there and listen to it 24 hours a day.
Hmm.
But at least listen an hour a day. You know? Like that. So like that, we chant Hare Krishna. At least you chant your 16 rounds, or 2 hours a day. As we become purified, we can chant all day. You know? At least you associate with devotees this much. As we advance, we can associate with devotees all day. So like that, it goes. So it's to ensure a basic, practical, efficient minimum. Like that. So it's all written into rules and regulations just so we do it. And we understand the philosophy, what's going on. Like we're in the discussion, we're trying to bring out what's actually happening here. You know, if you don't respect the Lord's paraphernalia, what's the meaning if I worship the Lord, but I don't respect his paraphernalia, right? I worship the Lord, and then I don't mind, you know, touching the paraphernalia with my feet or dropping it on the floor. I don't polish it properly or this or that. So here we're actually worshiping the paraphernalia, so we get an understanding this paraphernalia is worshipable because it's connected to the Lord. So then that means is now I'm just worrying about a bell and a conch shell, but pretty soon it's, you know, all the paraphernalia and then the Lord's dresses and the temple room and the temple, and then later we'll see the devotees are being worshipped, so then all the devotees and then his whole mission and his whole philosophy and then the whole cosmic creation. Is this all connected with him. Then we're able to enter into Vrindavan. Then everything becomes worshipable for us. Even we're there. That's the thing. That's the interesting thing, is that the residents of the spiritual realm, especially we see there in Vrindavan, they're always appreciating someone else's service. They're always talking about, like the gopis we see, how fortunate are the bamboos that are growing next to the river, you know, River Jamuna, because their descendant is Krishna's flute. And so that flute then gets to taste the nectar of Krishna's lips. How fortunate is this? They must be so happy knowing that they're descendant. So they're able to appreciate, you know, the parental rasa or the you know, the friendship rasa or the family rasa or the community rasa that is there that may be experienced by the bamboos because descendants or that is Krishna's flute. So they're able to appreciate and taste that rasa that they're tasting, you know, to enough degree of appreciation. And that, or they're talking about the forest, how pious and wonderful is the forest. You know, it's doing so much service for Krishna, like that. And Krishna and Balaram are appreciating. They're going around and talking about all the different, how they're all worshipping, and, you know, how humble the trees are. They're always laden with so much fruit and flowers. They're bending down, offering their fruits to the Lord, like that. You know, and it's mentioned, someone with a lot of service is humble. You see that whole how do you say? It's a very interesting chapter. Let's see, was it the... The one on autumn?
The autumn season.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the biggest chapters. But all, it's showing how everything in Vrindavan goes back to philosophy. Mm. All the philosophy comes out of the pastimes of Vrindavan. You know? So you can't separate them. You have all the different things going. From that, all the philosophy comes out. You know, very, very nice analogies are all given there.
That's the one Prabhupada drew out for the light of the Bhagavad for that.
Yeah, yeah. Because there, you know, they'll see it as they can see God in nature. You know, it's like good for them. But the whole point is the whole pastimes and aspects of Vrindavan and all that. Then you can get the whole philosophy from there. So it's very nice. So that means then when you read about these. I mean, especially what it does is when you read the philosophy, then you can connect it all back to Vrindavan. You know, that is the nice thing. You can connect it all back. So you just see Krishna. So that's the whole point. Whatever you're discussing, you can connect it back to Krishna. You know, or it all reminds you of Krishna. That's the whole idea, is whatever I'm doing, I have to connect it to Krishna. So I'm attached to eating, then I connect that eating to Krishna. Then my attachment to the eating actually purifies me. If I'm attached to home and family and all that, then I connect all that to Krishna. Then my attachment for that, I actually become purified, because I see it in connection with Krishna. I'm attached to money, I connect that to Krishna. Then I will become purified by that. So that's the whole idea of the sadhana and the varnashram system, is how to connect all those things to Krishna. So depending upon our degree of attachment, then we evoke those particular rules and regulations, and that and the aspects of philosophy that connect to that, that will give us that, how do you say? That will transform our attachment from the material into the spiritual. Because when you connect it to Krishna, then it's Krishnized. Then our dealing with it, we're purified. Like that. Very, very nice system. So, I guess we should end here. Tomorrow we'll continue on going through more of the details of the Guru and Gauranga worship in yoga. There's no program in the evening, is there? In Balarams? Oh, yes. The honorable pot breaking. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.